ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Norman, are you a Stanley girly or a Frank Green girly?
I have no clue what you're talking about. Frank Green doesn't sound great, but, you know, Stanley sounds fine. I mean, but I don't know what I'm committing to here.
It's a water bottle thing. If you know, you know.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So, no, neither. I don't have a water bottle.
You don't have a water bottle?
Even when I go to the gym, I don't have a water bottle.
How do you signal to the world around you that you stay hydrated and are also on trend?
I walk over impatiently to the water fountain and stand there while people fill out those Stanley Green and whatever the name is, Frank Green and Stanley water bottles. And I go, numpty, 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 numpty. I just want a sip of water. Thanks very much.
So you just sip straight from the water fountain?
Well, not my mouth totally over it, but yeah. Yeah.
That's so old school. I love that for you.
Yeah.
Well, like, you've got to have seen these bottles around, right?
I have. Well, now that you've mentioned it, I have. Just don't look at the brand.
How much would you spend on, like, a good quality, aesthetically pleasing water bottle?
$1.50? $2?
Keep going.
Oh, really? How much are they?
I want you to pick I want you to guess how much.
Oh, God. $15.95.
More.
More?
Oh, so much, so much.
You're kidding me.
Yes. The brand name ones are between, like, $60 to $90.
What a rip-off.
What a rip-off indeed.
So, well, now this is now flooding back to my last trip to the gym. You see people with like 1 gallon in all yes. terms.
You've got to go to the gym to be strong enough to lift the water bottle to your lips. It's like a kind of like a bicep curl action. Well, let's get into it because we're going to talk about it in depth today.
Yeah, in What's That Rash, where we answer your health questions.
So today's question comes from Daniel, who asks, do I really need to drink 2 litres of water per day? I always thought so, but lately I've been reading that it's not necessary. I think I know what Daniel's been reading.
What's he been reading?
Well, there's this study it's sort of a review of the evidence that came out a few years ago now that kind of looked at the origins of the water recommendations that get bandied about, and it's actually really murky, not the water, the guidelines.
They are, for all sorts of reasons. But look, why don't you take us through some of the evolution of water drinking before we get to this question that Daniel's asked, which is a very sensible one. You walk down and through an average office, walk through the ABC here. I don't know if they've got your expensive bottles, but there's plenty of people with bottles of water on their desk glugging it back.
Yeah. So I want to talk to you about two types of evolution. One, human evolution, one of my favourite things to talk about, but also the evolution of the 8 glasses a day thing, which I don't know where I thought it came from, but I've managed to trace it back to 1945, and it was based on milliliters per energy expended across the day, and then what that would translate to in terms of water intake across the day. And basically for the average human, it translated to about 8 glasses of 8 ounces each, which not only is sensible and based in maths, it's also very like meme-y. It's a sort of thing that people can kind of get around. It's a bit like the 10,000 steps thing. What the recommendations kind of miss, though, is the nuance around how much water you may be getting in your food or other fluids you might be drinking throughout the day. Like, it doesn't have to necessarily be 8 glasses of water in addition to everything else you put in your mouth.
And here's the key, which is partly an answer to Daniel. It's about whether you force yourself to drink this 8 glasses a day or you take it in anyway.
Yeah, and I'm curious to like ask you a lot more about that, but we did talk before about human evolution, and I was really surprised to discover that humans are real outliers when it comes to the amount of water we need. And basically, humans are very much designed to outrun big animals that we hunted for game because we can outlast them in terms of how we regulate our body temperature. And so a human can run across, well, not me, but another human can run across a savanna for hours and eventually kind of wear out an antelope or something like that. And part of the reason we can do that is because our body is really good at shedding heat. And we do that through not having body hair and by having lots and lots of sweat glands. And so we're able to evaporate a lot of water off our bodies really quickly and keep that body temperature cool on the inside. Fantastic adaptation to running around on a savanna. Not so good if you want to keep water inside your body and we don't have huge amounts of water storage in our body, like, say, a camel or something does. And so there's this sort of push and pull with water and humans where we're good at getting rid of it, but we also need to replenish it pretty regularly.
Indeed. But we're better than you think and better than people think when they feel they've got to drink 2 litres a day. Because we are actually quite good at controlling our water supply. So if you look at the physiology of it, shall I get into the physiology?
Yes, I love this. Yes, please.
So we have something, it's very old-fashioned to talk about it. It's called thirst. And thirst evolved for a very good reason, to make us drink, you know, to tell you, you need to drink, chum. So thirst is a feeling that we get when, and this is incredibly complicated, I'm going to oversimplify, but essentially when your blood becomes more concentrated and there's more electrolytes per litre of your blood or 100 mils of your blood, that's detected in your brain. It's also detected peripherally as well in your arteries by the volume of your blood going down when you're a bit dehydrated. And so you get multiple messages going to your brain, via a part of the brain called the hypothalamus, which is, if you like, a master control center for hormones of different kinds. The hypothalamus sends a message to a gland just very near it called the pituitary gland, which sends out another hormone called the antidiuretic hormone. And this stops you peeing. So it shuts down your kidneys. And one of the reasons you don't get up a lot during the night to pee compared to how much you pee during the day is that at night your antidiuretic hormone goes up to stop you peeing.
Thank you, sir. And I'm talking to the hormone.
And then there are the kidneys themselves can go into action through hormones called renin and angiotensin, and they can preserve sodium or not, as the case may be, and they can switch sodium for water in your kidneys. Because water is so important and these electrolytes like sodium and potassium are so important to our survival, there are multiple mechanisms going on to control it. But the key message for us grossly is this old-fashioned thing called thirst.
Well, this is it. So I want to talk about why it's so important, because it's sort of baked into your answer a little bit there, that things about blood volume and the concentrations of various substances in the body. And like we were saying before, you know, you sweat out a lot of water. What is water doing in the body when it's at the right concentrations?
Well, it's the substrate for pretty much everything. Water is just part of what we need to stay alive. It's what carries hormones. It's what carries our blood. It's, you know, essentially, there's water in our blood. There's water in our tissues. It's a carrier of substances inside our cells and outside our cells, and our cells are largely made of water. So effectively, it's the medium. It's like you need water to cook rice. You need water to make your cells work.
So if our thirst is so good at telling us how much water we need, then why is there such a culture around drinking recommended daily intakes of water? And like some of the water bottles I was looking at have like motivational messages written on the side, like keep chugging and you're halfway there. Like you sort of got to like force yourself to drink this 2 litres a day. When you're saying to me that our thirst cues should be enough?
Absolutely. And one can only assume that it's commercial to help sell more $60 bottles of water.
That makes more sense.
And of course, water itself, if you're drinking water that comes in plastic bottles, is very expensive.
But there's been big parts of human history, and there are parts of the world today, where drinking straight water hasn't been the safest way to hydrate your body. And people have drunk beer or tea or coffee.
Or tea, that's right.
Yeah.
So essentially they're still drinking water, they're just taking it in another form. And for a lot of human history, it was beer or weak wine that people drank, because the fermentation process also helped to sterilize the water as well. So there were various beverages which got round the fact that water was often unsafe.
There is, I mean, you and me, we could talk about Jon Snow and the Broad Street Pump all day long, that famous place in London where the father epidemiologist discovered the fact that basically people were dying of cholera because of tainted water. But the guys who worked at the brewer's factory, they didn't get it because they had their own deeper well and obviously also had access to a supply of beer.
Yeah, as a very famous microbiologist at the University of Melbourne, Professor Nancy Millis once said, this whole evolution of human history is about separating the mouth from the anus.
Okay, cool. We'll leave that one there. But okay, what about water from things that aren't liquid, like fruit, for example, lots and lots of water in it? How much are we getting from our food?
That varies according to your diet. So in some parts of the world, milk's a major part of the diet. In some parts of the world, people eat a lot of fruit, and that will give them a lot of water. But most foods have water in them. And it's hard to generalize how much water you get from food, but it is a significant percentage. So food gives you water as well. This is why the 2 litres a day thing is so artificial, because we do it without thinking. I mean, a survey around the world of how much people drink without being prompted to drink tells you that without thinking about drinking, we will consume, either by drinking or eating, between 2 and 3 litres a day. So the one comparison I want to make to give you some reassurance about the fact that you don't necessarily have to think about drinking your 2 litres a day. There are exceptions to this, by the way, which I'll come to in a moment. But if you look at elite athletes, what's good enough for them should be good enough for you and I. I mean, I know you're an elite athlete,
yes.
You know, with your climbing and, and all your pre-workout drinks that you're taking, pointing to a previous episode and also one of our great videos on Instagram. Is elite athletes. So elite athletes are they're evaporating a lot of water in their exercise, particularly if they're exercising in the heat. And it used to be, for example, with marathon runners and other endurance sports, they would say, stop at every water table and drink water. Or you've got to keep yourself hydrated. Don't wait on thirst. Get ahead of your thirst and drink. And what they found was the incidence of a very dangerous condition or a potentially dangerous condition called hyponatremia occurred, which is caused by water overload where the sodium levels in your blood go down. And your sodium levels are very closely monitored by your kidneys and your hypothalamus because there's a very narrow range where, for example, particularly your heart can operate and your nerves and so on. And hyponatremia in its most extreme form can kill you. So what they found was that these athletes were developing hyponatremia, signs of water overload, and their times went down. And research has shown, for example, in some endurance athletes, that in fact their performance is at its best when they're just a little bit dehydrated, maybe 2% dehydrated. And there's conflicting evidence there. But the overall message is, if you're a little bit dry when you're doing elite sport, you're actually a bit better off. Not a lot dry, but a little dry. And what coaches teach their athletes is drink to thirst. When you're thirsty, drink. Don't force yourself to drink. And in fact, that was the recommendation of a group of experts who got together a few years ago to make recommendations on this. So you don't, if athletes don't need to force themselves to drink, I don't think you or I do either.
Okay, then, flip side of that, if you've got a giant water bottle that's encouraging you to drink or that's something that you like to do, are you putting yourself in danger by drinking too much water?
I think if you are incredibly obsessed by it and you go overboard and you're chugging large numbers of these bottles, then yes, but that would be an unusual situation. So the answer is mostly you're not, but you'll be going to the bathroom a lot to pee. You know, what goes in comes out. And in fact, if you go to the gym, your gym performance may be reduced because you're carrying more water.
So bottom line, trusting your thirst is probably okay.
It is, with exception. I promised at the beginning I'd come back to exceptions. And there are two briefly. One is elderly, frail people sometimes just don't drink enough. They don't remember to drink enough and need to be encouraged to drink enough. The other is kids with autism spectrum disorder. They're not good at getting the messages from inside their bodies about hunger and thirst. So sometimes kids who are on the severe end of the autism spectrum disorder need to be encouraged to drink. But those are the two main caveats.
Mm. So thank you, Daniel, for sending in your question. And if you want to send a question, you can hit us up. We are thatrash@abc.net.au. We get more than questions at that email address. And I wanted to, I want to start it as a new segment. I'm calling it the N of One Show and Tell Corner.
Yeah, we love new words, to give you new words on What's That Rash. We've given you Pluk, we've given you Doolally and many others, and now we're giving you N of One. So you better explain what N of One is.
Oh, yeah. N of One, in an experiment, the number of participants is the N. And so in these experiments, there's the N of One, which is where you basically do an experiment on yourself or on one person and then generalise those results across a population.
Yeah, you're the one.
You're the one. Anyway, Norman, Leia has messaged in telling a story about when she owned shares in a radiology practice and her partner at the time was the CT operator. And they had to do a test, a barium dye. So basically when they give someone something to take so that then they can then do a scan of that person and then that thing shows up more clearly on the scan. Am I explaining it right?
Well, that's right. You swallow barium because barium is dense to x-rays. And when you swallow it, it can show up your stomach, your bowel.
So with this, in this case, what they needed to be able to do was image the esophagus, so the pipe that your food goes down. And they thought that if they mixed it with a pre-workout gel, they thought it would coat the esophagus, hold the dye for longer so that it would show up on the scan. So this person and their boss decided to do a baseline test with just the pre-workout gel rather than adding the barium.
But not on the patient.
No. On themselves, of course. This is our N equals one showcase corner. The test subject drank half a packet of bubblegum flavoured pre-workout gel, was put into the CT scanner and scanned, and it turned out that the pre-workout gel that cost $1.95 was more reactive to the CT than the medically recommended $95 barium dye agent. And it lasted longer in the body.
God, no. So that sounds marvellous on one side, but scary on the other. Did she have an explanation for why?
She says that she gathered that the high concentrations of trace metals contained in the gel was the culprit. So,
well, if that's a recommendation against
pre-workout,
definitely is one.
Leah, thank you so much for sending that in. If you have an N equals one study that you would like to publish in this peer-reviewed podcast, please email us. We are thatrash@abc.net.au.
Don't experiment dangerous stuff just for the sake of getting on the podcast.
Yeah, no, we take no legal responsibility for anything that comes of it. But if you do it, please still send us a hilariously worded email so that we can read it aloud and be funny by extension.
So tell us which ICU you're in. We'll send you flowers and we'll see you next week.
See you then.